Welcome to the American Cafe. I'm Ira Melman. Many students who come to the United States to go to college want to stay here after graduation, but for many, that is not an easy task.
The challenge for the international candidate is finding the company that's willing to either sponsor or will take them for the amount of time that their visa is current. Because once their visa's up and they have to leave, chances are they're not going to get sponsored.
Bernard Chessman pays us a visit with the story. Carolyn Weaver checks in from New York City with the story of a popular tourist attraction there that the mayor wants to stop.
We are going to quickly and aggressively move to make horse carriages no longer a part of the landscape in New York City. They're not humane. They're not appropriate to the year 2014. It's over.
And from Los Angeles comes word of a new way to relive ancient Pompeii.
This was a city that was a resort, it was luxurious, it was high living, and then it was just, you know, wiped off the face of the earth all at once. There's something very sort of mythical about that story.
Mike O'Sullivan brings us that story. All of that and more on this week's American Cafe. Each year, America attracts thousands of foreign students seeking a college education and work experience. But staying in the United States after graduation can be more difficult because of visa and job constraints. Bernard Chessman reports from New York City.
It's graduation day for students at the College of New Rochelle in New York. Some came from other countries to study here and are among 800,000 foreign students in the United States. Many look forward taking what they have learned back to their home countries. But some want to stay in America.
I decided to study for the Master's in Public Administration because I also thought about back home, how best I could utilize this. You can go back home and work even in the government section and be a help to your country.
I grew up in a place where schooling was not for me. Extremely poor, I was not able to attend school. And the College of New Rochelle is basically my start. My goal is to, as much as I can, to go back to Jamaica so that they can see that they can accomplish their dreams.
But some want to stay in America.
I would love to keep my skill set growing in America. I definitely want to get a start here in the workforce. I feel it's competitive. I feel you are forced to stretch and reach to certain limits and challenge yourself. And there's variety, and it's very innovative and creative, which I like.
For foreign students like these, launching a career in this country will not be easy, even with an improving U.S. economy.
Have a lovely day.
Philip Press is an executive with a job placement company.
The challenge for the international candidate is finding the company that's willing to either sponsor or will take them for the amount of time that their visa is current. Because once their visa's up and they have to leave, chances are they're not going to get sponsored.
Generally, if foreign students cannot find a work sponsor, they will have to leave. But overall, the news for the class of 2014 is better nationwide, according to David Smith of the management consulting company Accenture, which conducts an annual survey of job prospects.
Coming out into the job market this year, they're actually being, you know, giving us signs of much more optimism about their prospects ahead. They're also telling us they're much more willing to be mobile to look at job prospects beyond their local marketplace where they went to college or university.
Accenture found 80% of the students expect to get training on the job. But after 1 or 2 years, the management company says only half have received training. Bernard Chessman, VOA News, New York.
Horse-drawn carriages have operated in New York City for more than 150 years, taking tourists and locals on picturesque rides through Central Park. But with the election of Mayor Bill de Blasio, a controversy over the business, opposed by animal rights activists, has flared up. VOA's Carolyn Weaver is here with the story.
The horse-drawn carriages line up along 59th Street, awaiting passengers who pay about $50 for a half-hour ride through Central Park.
Whoa, dream.
The business is governed by dozens of animal welfare regulations, limiting working hours and weather conditions, and requiring that each horse have a 5-week annual vacation in the country. Driver Connor McHugh also helps manage one of the stables in the city.
All we want a horse to do is be able to just give a nice walk through the park. So we're not looking for them to perform
any, you know, great feat. It's relatively easy for the horses, and it's a good life for what I would call a working class horse.
But opponents point to occasional accidents. They say the business is inherently cruel, that horses suffer from being in city streets and living in stalls most of the year, and that they need daily pasture. The most prominent opponent, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, made the ban one of his first priorities after his election last fall.
We are going to quickly and aggressively move to make horse carriages no longer a part of the landscape in New York City. They're not humane, they're not appropriate to the year 2014. It's over.
Celebrities, including the singer Pink, have helped campaign to build support.
Every time I see a horse-drawn carriage with its nose in the tailpipe of a cab and the blinders on and all the pollution and the congestion and the traffic and the noise, it just hurts my heart.
But opposition to a ban also flared.
I was disappointed that Mayor de Blasio didn't accept my invitation to tour the stables with me.
Actor Liam Neeson narrated a film in support of the horse-drawn carriages.
And see for themselves why every veterinarian who has seen the stables over the years have given it their stamp of approval.
According to news reports, de Blasio received about $50,000 in campaign contributions from backers of the main group opposing the horse carriages, New Yorkers for Clean, Safe, Livable Streets, New York Class. Allie Feldman is executive director of the group, which also supported city council candidates.
We helped elect 39 pro-animal city council members, and we're going to be holding them all to their commitment to ban horse-drawn carriages.
New York Class wants the horse carriages replaced by electric vehicles modeled to look like antique cars, and the horses sent to live out their lives in farm sanctuaries. But the group that manages Central Park opposes allowing motor vehicles there. And polls show that most New Yorkers want to keep the carriage horses in business. Carolyn Weaver, VOA News, New York.
One of the worst natural disasters in recorded history, the destruction of Pompeii by a volcano nearly 2,000 years ago, has often been the subject of Hollywood drama. Now the California Science Center is presenting the history and the science behind that tragedy. Michael Sullivan reports from California.
Mount Vesuvius unleashed fiery gases and scorching ash on August 24th in 79 AD. Visitors to the California Science Center see a computer-generated film reconstructing the tragedy. The disaster has been shown on screen many times in an Italian feature from 1913 and other Hollywood treatments, including scenes of this year's epic film Pompeii. Archaeologist Kenneth Lopatin says hot ash preserved the outlines of the victims and kept intact many everyday items that surrounded them.
When we go to Rome, we have the glorious shells of great imperial buildings. What Pompeii gives us is something we don't get in the literary sources, which is the everyday, the domestic, the simple.
Including the coins and artwork, household gods, work tools, and cooking utensils. Pompeii was a small commercial city away from the ancient Roman centers of power, and its neighboring community, Herculaneum, was a Mediterranean resort. Both were buried in the eruption. Diane Perloff of the California Science Center says they still hold a fascination.
This was a city that was a resort, it was luxurious, it was high living, and then it was just, you know, wiped off the face of the earth all at once. There's something very sort of mythical about that story.
The film Pompeii, released in February, brought that drama to the screen with a mix of fact and fiction, says Kenneth Lopati.
The latest Pompeii film, I think, did a really good job of capturing urban topography. They did flights over the site, and they computer reconstructed the city. The volcano, I think, they did a good job of. They didn't have a lot of lava. They had volcanic gases and clouds and mudslides, because if you had a lot of lava, we wouldn't have anything preserved. It would have been burnt and destroyed.
That science is explained here, along with a fascinating glimpse into the everyday lives of these ancient Romans, their medical tools, artworks, and the weapons and armor used by gladiators. 150 items are on loan from the Naples National Archaeological Museum. California Science Center President Jeff Rudolph.
The forces of nature are incredibly strong, and we've learned to live with them, but they can have catastrophic consequences.
Pompeii was rediscovered in the 18th century, buried beneath the ash, with haunting images that stare out from its artwork. Those faces from the past speak to modern viewers, says Kenneth Lopatin.
But I think it also is a mirror of the present, where we see ourselves in the past, and that's why for 250 years, Pompeii, since its rediscovery, has been incredibly popular, and exhibitions like this one are so exciting.
And why the drama of Pompeii still intrigues us. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
U.S. technology giant Google made a step forward in its push for self-driving cars by unveiling a prototype without any manual controls. Google says someday its vehicles will be better drivers than many humans who drive today's cars. More from VOA's George Putich.
Google's self-driving cars are not a rare sight in Western states like California and Nevada, whose legislators are more open to the idea of vehicles with only passive human control. So far, Google has been converting standard, mass-produced cars with regular steering wheels and pedals where a person in the driver's seat could take over at any time. The subcompact two-seater presented this week is a totally new concept without the possibility for the passengers to control direction, speed, or braking. After entering the destination in the onboard computer, humans can only sit and observe the scenery or watch the car's progress on the electronic display. The top speed is limited to 40 kilometers per hour. In the video Google released for the occasion, the company's director for self-driving cars, Chris Urmson, emphasized that the new vehicle is only a prototype.
They were a chance for us to explore what does it really mean to have a self-driving vehicle. But in the small amount of time we've been working on it, you know, we have functional prototypes, and that's exciting.
Urmson says Google wants to develop the technology up to the point where people would be able to call up a car and have it take them where they want to go. The car would then go to the next caller. It is very likely that by 2020, semi-autonomous drive vehicles will be common, says Zoran Filippi, professor of automotive engineering at Clemson University. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
We will be able to enjoy other activities while in the car, and very importantly, we'll be absolutely safe in traffic.
Filippi says we'll be relieved of some burden of driving on the freeway, but we'll be able to resume control as we approach our destination. Google plans to build about 100 of these prototypes, some with manual controls, and test them on California roads. If all goes well, we could be speeding down the road to the future in driverless cars. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
Cavities in teeth may someday be repaired using laser therapy. U.S. researchers are using the technology to regrow the tissue inside damaged teeth. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
Since the 1960s, doctors have used laser therapy to repair damaged tissue and destroy unwanted cells. Lasers can be tuned to different wavelengths to remove plaque from coronary arteries, to seal off leaky blood vessels in the eyes of people with diabetes to preserve sight, and to reattach retinas, the light-sensing structure in the back of the eye. Now, Harvard University researchers are using low-power lasers to repair teeth. A bioengineer at the school's Weiss Institute, David Mooney, says scientists aim their laser light for a few minutes on damaged teeth in rats.
We drill through, create this tissue defect, and then we shine a laser onto the defect and through it into the soft tissue that lies underneath the defect. And then we place a temporary filling over that to provide some mechanical protection.
After about 12 weeks, researchers removed the temporary filling and used X-rays to reveal the growth of new bone-like tissue called dentin. The laser light stimulated the regeneration by activating biologically dormant molecules called growth factors. Doctors have used low-level light therapy to activate a number of biological processes, including hair growth and skin repair, without knowing how it worked. In an article in Science Translational Medicine, the Harvard researchers identified transforming growth factor beta-1 as the regenerative protein. Mooney says it's unlikely that whole teeth could be regrown with laser therapy, but he sees two main applications: growing new dentin for people whose teeth are sensitive to hot and cold food and drink, and as an alternative to a root canal. In that procedure, all of the soft tissue inside the tooth is removed to repair decay or damage to the tooth.
So you could replace the lost dentin with reparative dentin, and hopefully then maintain the health of the overall tooth. So that's one application that we would see this being useful in.
Having shown that the treatment is effective in rats, researchers are now planning clinical trials to see whether tooth regeneration can work in humans. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Technology is causing major changes in the music industry, from music streaming and digital downloads on the internet to live concerts promoted through social media. Elizabeth Lee reports on how artists and industry executives are evolving with technology.
Suburban Skies is a band that says it can promote itself and control its destiny thanks to 21st century technology.
Social media is a wonderful thing, and being able to control your own art and not be signed by a record label, to be your own record label is, I think, liberating.
Founder Nick Sherwin says the internet has created more opportunities for musicians. He says the key to success is giving fans a multifaceted experience.
The most important thing is content. You have to have songs, videos, to be able to get up and do this. But I think it's extremely important to do shows, to build your brand, to build your reputation.
In a recent discussion about the future of the music business, industry experts say with CD sales declining in the U.S., more musicians are hitting the stage. Rob Light is head of music at the talent agency Creative Artists Agency.
The majority of the income for artists now is coming from the live marketplace.
Along with the popularity of live music, there has also been an explosion of music festivals, including events that feature electronic dance music, again with the help of social media.
Someone could make it in their bedroom and put it out there. And people can gain fans that way online without anyone's help. And that's absolutely helped the growth of dance music.
Pasquale Rotella's company, Insomniac, produces electronic dance music festivals in several different countries.
It's the lights, they have the dancers, it's a very visual show. It's a different environment versus your standard rock show.
Fans are also getting music through digital downloads and online streaming services. But they are still tuning in to the radio, says Bob Pittman, the head of radio conglomerate Clear Channel Communications.
In this era of streaming services, radio listeners have increased. And if you look at the research, 70% of Americans would say, where did you discover the music you buy in your music collection? 70% say FM radio.
But Bob Light predicts radio will become obsolete.
I don't believe that terrestrial radio will be as relevant to a 12-year-old today in 5 or 6 years. And if you're going to look forward, I think they're going to get their information, that exact information, from other places and other sources.
With what seems like limitless places for people to go and find music, Nick Sherwin is not worried. He just wants to reach those who like his style of music with the help of the internet. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
And now our tribute to the top music of the week.
I'm Ray McDonald on The Voice of America, and this is the Top 5 Countdown. We're featuring the 5 most popular songs in the Billboard Hot 100 Pop Singles Chart for the week ending June 7th, 2014. I'm glad you dropped by today, and you will be too, because something happens this week on the Hot 100 that hasn't occurred in half a century. That's still to come. First, let's swing by 5th place for DJ Snake and Lil Jon, holding steady with Turn Down for What. This record could have been different. I'll have details after the song. Snake and Lil Jon spend another week at number 5 with Turn Down for What? DJ Snake says he initially wanted to sample Redman for this track. When Redman wouldn't clear the sample, Lil Jon entered the picture and voila, it became a big hit. Staying put in 4th place is Pharrell Williams with Happy. Pharrell has a busy festival season in store. Details are on the way. Because I'm happy. Clap along. Pharrell Williams treads water in 4th place with his former title holder, Happy. This North American summer, Pharrell will log plenty of air miles. June and July find him at several European festivals, with a proper European tour kicking off in early September. John Legend loses his singles crown in 3rd place with All of Me in the wake of this week's historic chart shift. Now, the news isn't all bad for John, though. Stay tuned for more. 'Cause all it's a bad news, good news kind of week on the charts for John Legend. He ends his stint atop the Hot 100 as All of Me falls to 3rd place. However, this week it takes the Billboard Adult Contemporary title. Also, John's Love in the Future album has surpassed 500,000 U.S. sales. Now we come to the good part. There's a major development atop the hit list. Ariana Grande and Iggy Azalea touch it off with Problem, jumping a slot to 2nd place. Ariana Grande and Iggy Azalea jump a notch to 2nd place with Problem. Ariana is a 20-year-old singer-actress, while Iggy is a 23-year-old rapper from Australia. As a teenager, she came to the United States with the intention of becoming a star, and it seems as though her dream is coming true. Iggy and Charlie XCX ascend the singles throne with Fancy, and that's just the beginning. Hold on for details. Azalea jumps a slot to number 1 with Fancy, featuring British singer Charlie XCX. Iggy becomes the first artist since the Beatles in 1964 to reach the top 2 chart positions with her first 2 Hot 100 singles. Iggy is also only the 3rd woman to concurrently hold 1st and 2nd place. Ashanti did it in 2002, with Mariah Carey following in 2005. That's going to do it for now, but the action never stops on the Hot 100. Drop by next week, and we'll do it again. I'm Ray McDonald, and this has been the Top 5 Countdown on The Voice of America.
That's all the time we have for this week's program. Our thanks, as always, to producer Bob Doty. If you'd like to hear more about these stories, check our website at voanews.com. We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, americancafe@voanews.com. Give us a telephone call. Dial the international code, then the number 1 for the United States, followed by 202-205-9942. When you hear the VOA ID, press 05 and then leave your questions or comments. For all the folks here at VOA, I'm Ira Melman. We'll see you next time on American Cafe.